Thank you for tuning in and listening to Kumasan, a fantasy fiction story podcast. This style of podcast harkens back to old-fashioned radio dramas, blended with the rich storytelling of an audiobook. Kumasan is an ongoing weekly series, so it's recommended that you begin listening with episode 1 and continue from there. Kumasan depicts fictional violence and features mature language. Listener and parental discretion is advised. Previously on Kumasan, up in northernmost Pojikar, a gigantic glowing meteorite hurtled from out of the snowy sky, landing at the feet of young Kraltsaren soldier Alvast Harnkor. The glow from the meteorite transferred into Alvast's soul, turning his eyes glowing blue and the rest of him into an unfeeling evil husk. On the southern coast of Quindror, the wizard Magog Gabriel was visited in the night by the Vakmala, a snow owl with the gift of all-knowing wisdom, who instructed Magog to take the northern road to his ancestral childhood home, the Citadel, and discover his father's body of writings and knowledge. In eastern Nemet, the young boatbuilder's son, Aiden Paulin, gifted with both blind sight and lightning step, secretly sails away from his home, but is attacked by a ferocious sea serpent, destroying his boat and leaving him stranded at sea. Aiden is rescued by a seemingly friendly but dubious crew of pirates, headed by Captain Morgan Alma and his first mate Angwa, and is welcomed into their crew. This week, we touch down upon the green Goddess Isles, upon the western continent of Cirque. She knelt down in the dirt, surrounded all the way around by rugged fighting men that were easily 3 and 4 times her own size, and any means of escape was hopelessly gone now. Beyond the men around her, the dirty pit she knelt in was also surrounded entirely by a 30-foot wall of massive black timbers, topped by a parapet and walkway, which was filled with onlookers who remained still, content to only spectate, offering no action whatsoever to help her. Brandishing swords, axes, chains, and spike-laden wooden clubs, the brutes that surrounded her on the ground were slowly inching their way towards her. She chose to close her eyes to it all, choosing not to look, but instead simply listening to their steps coming closer, their movements hastening and readying action. The clanking of chains, the air being displaced by blades, the slight sliding of boot soles over the dirt that made up the floor of the seeming pit of death. The throng of ruffians continued edging forwards toward her, closing the gap, now easily close enough to snuff her life with ease. They shuffled toward her still, all in unison, one slow step at a time, inching closer, closer, closer. The girl's eyes remained closed as she listened intently as they approached. She showed no outward sign of concern as she simply knelt there like a stoic statue, waiting for the inevitable to come. Once they were but a scant few feet from her, she reached behind her head and withdrew a pair of twin swords from the leather scabbards upon her back and snapped bolt upright to her feet. She kept her eyes tightly closed, but like some sort of death-dealing carousel, she whirled about in circles, taking slices out of the men's arms, chests, and midsections in turn, two slices at a time, each dealt to a different attacker. She had already delivered wounds to all eight of the men nearest to her before any other man could engage her with his own weapon. Once engaged, however, they began to rain down upon her with all manner of weapon blows. She countered every attack with great ease, and the sounds of steel clanging against steel echoed loudly past the onlookers upon the walkway and out into the avenues of the rustic village beyond the walls of the pit. Her self-control and restraint in this situation was otherworldly. She could easily have mowed them all down in a flurry of flying limbs and decapitation, but deftly managed to inflict only flesh wounds while dodging and parrying every man's attack in the process. This went on for nearly 11 minutes in total, while not a single weapon of any attacker so much as glanced her body.
Halt!
A booming voice cried out loudly over the cacophony of fighting below him. A voice so booming and commanding that each one of the men immediately dropped their weapons to the ground and knelt and bowed their heads towards the young girl who had just bested them. It was only then that her eyes finally snapped open.
Isidre, I need these men in fighting shape for tomorrow!
The bleeding attackers in the courtyard mirrored the laughter with light, scattered chuckles as they all swiped their hands over their bloody but non-fatal wounds, but were careful not to unbow their heads or rise until they were directed to do so.
To your men, I say, let this not be a poor reflection on you and your skills. As you all know, my daughter has been training for this day since she popped from between her mother's legs.
The man with the booming voice, King Mertan Calderon, a man who looked more like a bearded, long-haired ox than that of a man, paced slowly atop the wall, moving past his men, bellowing loudly from the walkway above the pit. His giant smile was unmistakable and for a brief moment betrayed his threatening stature. A large, muscular body coated heavily with mystical black tattoos that ran from his face all the way down the front of his body. A body barely covered by fur, leather, and feathers, and a chest plate made of animal bones.
I eat my words, daughter. You are truly ready. Mark this day, my brothers, my family. My daughter, Isidre, gift of the goddess Isles, will sit at my hand tomorrow upon the hill of Ardoso and lead you with me into battle. Rise, my brothers! Gather your men into the village square to greet your new warlord supreme!
The men rose to their feet and cheered, left the walled pit, and headed into the village as instructed.
Tomorrow is a huge day for you, Isidre. You have proved to me this week that you are amply ready.
Thank you, Papa. I appreciate this. I too feel that I am ready to receive your most generous gift. My only regret is that Mama is not here to see me receive it.
With that said, The princess shot out of the pit and into the village to join her new ranks. King Mertan's younger brother, Varnaso, sidled up slowly next to the king, leaning in closely, a giant smile also upon his youthful face.
The pride you carry in your heart is mirrored within my own, my brother, my king. What a glorious day for a Calderon family. Her gifts are truly astounding. It is not just her tender young age that astounds us all, but given that Isidra is gifted by our goddess Cerquia, the goddess mother of Coralia, with blind sight, only adds to the marvel of her accolades.
Ah, Varnaso! I thank you for your kind words, little brother. Let us not forget she did not even have to employ her other gift of shadow skulking in this initial ritual. Cerquia helped those that suffered both of her gifts.
Indeed, my brother, indeed. You are a generous father and king. I also have to say, most young women would easily be married off at her age. To further our position, it speaks volumes of your love and faith that she has this great opportunity.
My thanks again, Varnaso. Yes, I will allow her to marry of her own free will, at her own discretion. Hopefully later than sooner. I need her at my side for a great deal to come. Can't have her popping out grandchildren just yet.
It was early morning, and as the twin suns broke above the horizon, the entire Cerquian army of the Calderon clan occupied the crest of the hill of Ardosso. They all sat upon horseback, shirtless, bare-chested, save for decorative smatterings of animal hides, beads, bones, small animal skulls, and other customized trinkets woven into ceremonial chest plates to be worn in battle. Upon their heads, all of them wore festive headdresses made of animal pelts, Apalexian feathers, and the like. At the center of the throng sat King Mertan, and at his right hand, his daughter, Isidra. Together they all sat in complete silence for quite some time, save only for the occasional huffing of the horses. Their gaze was transfixed on the empty valley below. Once a tapestry of lush and verdant green, with beautiful rolling hills gilded by wildflowers of every color of the rainbow, it now lay wrecked and ravaged, the ground brown and dusty, a collection of earthen piles pushed upwards into barren mounds. Aside from these mounds and the few dead trees that remained, nothing was down there. It was lifeless and soulless, and the winds roaring over it from the great ocean Hoff amplified its loneliness and despair. For most of the men, this was their first time seeing the sight, and they were noticeably horrified. The army, all 500 of them, were waiting the order of their king or his daughter, their newly appointed warlord supreme. The king leaned from atop his horse toward her and whispered to her, so that only she could hear, and no one else.
Well, Isidra, shall we get on with it? What will you have your men do?
After a brief amount of continued silence, The young warlord supreme turned her mount to the rear to face the ranks of her Calderonian men. She roared at the top of her lungs so that even the ranks at the rear could hear her, as the soft whooping of the men was already beginning.
Today, we sit upon this hill as one army, one family, united in our cause. Hear me now, my brothers, my beloved warriors of Surk. We will ride hard into that valley below us and take back all that you see that has been robbed of us. Some of us. Perhaps many of us will not return home. But the Goddess Mother would turn her eyes from us forever if we chose to let her bosom be raped in this way and did nothing to save it. For Surk, for the Goddess Mother, I command you to ready your weapons and charge!
The men roared, hooted, and howled like bloodthirsty animals as they brandished their own spears and followed her and her father, who had already led the charge into the valley below. The sound of 2,000 hoofs beating against the hill was like the sound of rolling thunder, enough to wake the dead, and certainly enough to wake what was fast asleep below ground. As the army reached the valley, 5 gargantuan beasts exploded up from the dead soil, spraying Calderonian men and horses in every direction as if they were mere toys. They were all Kalalad, gigantic subterranean creatures who literally suck and drain the life force from the natural world around them, and they had certainly done their work here. The beasts stood a full 30 feet tall, with heads like that of moles, and bodies like hulkish, muscle-swollen men. Chains draped from their nose rings and lips to their 2 pairs of massive stone-like tusks that branched out from their cheeks and necks. The riders closest to them immediately began the assault, launching spears into the nude flesh of the behemoth creatures, hoping to reach vital organs. Many of the bravest warriors got to their feet on horseback and used the forward momentum provided by the horses and their own natural high-jumping prowess to launch themselves into the air, landing wherever they could upon the beasts and stabbing repeatedly until swatted away. One Calderonian warrior managed a tremendous leap onto one beast's shoulder and planted his spear into a jugular artery, opening a torrent of beast blood that sprayed out 38 feet and rained down a blood shower upon his brethren below before he was eventually shook off, then impaled by the beast's tusk in midair. The beast eventually went crashing downward in a heap, crushing 4 men and 3 horses in the process. As one would suspect, the valley was engulfed in rivers of blood, chaos, and frenzy as the warriors sought to overcome significant disadvantage. They all knew going into this fight this day, it would be a fight of numbers, and many would not live to recount the day. 5 minutes into the battle, and already 180 warriors were dead or gravely wounded, and only one beast lay fell. The battle raged on as men were smacked aside, sent flying into the air, 5 at a time, crushed under mammoth hooves, gored, or impaled by tusks, or raked across the ground by gigantic chains. As they thinned in numbers, the men managed to fell 2 more beasts with deft, strategized tactics. They were adapting well now to their circumstances, moving in unison, picking up the pace, and making every moment count. Like a well-oiled machine of hundreds of intricate parts, the Calderonian warriors hit their stride, and victory seemed finally within their grasp. King Mertan was atop the head of the fourth beast, driving his spear deep into its brain when he caught sight of Isidra hanging from one of the draping chains of the fifth, carving an exaggerated Y into its throat with one of her twin swords. He smiled proudly as the throat blood of that fifth beast poured like a waterfall onto her brothers below, signaling the end of the battle. As the beast and Isidra came crashing earthward, the remaining warriors and their king began yelping and howling the traditional Calderonian victory cry. Bloodied spears were lifted skyward and shook with fervor, and although many brothers' lives were lost in this valley, a sense of celebration ensued. As per tradition, the men drank small amounts of the beast's blood directly from the wounds and painted stripes on their faces with their fingertips. After the whooping and handshaking had dwindled down, everyone began scanning the carnage and assessing the loss. Out of 500 Calderonians, almost half of them were either dead or wounded to a degree that now ended their fighting career. This was no small loss, as the only men not on this field, back at the village, were a small smattering of guardsmen, the already impaired, or men too young to fight yet. It was a devastating blow to the Calderon population, and would leave behind many grieving widows and fatherless children. But such was the nature of battle, and the Calderon were a battling bunch. But the reclamation of this valley was key to their continued survival, and despite the victory this day, it would still be another year or two before the valley could once again grow lush and support the multitude of crops that they depended on for sustenance and trade. Not the least of which was the much coveted plant known as Cantus, commonly referred to by all Karelians colloquially as pipeweed, a sweet, narcotic herb used for pipe smoking by all Karelians, and undoubtedly the greatest of Sirkian exports. King Mertan and Isidra finally found each other on the battlefield and embraced for a long while. The king glad to see his only child alive and unharmed, and proud of her prowess. Isidra, in turn, was happy to be embraced by her father. He was as spry and cunning as she imagined him to be in his youth, but that youth had long since passed, and she secretly fretted about how many more battles the aging ruler could sustain. It took the surviving Calderonians well into the morning of the next day to dig graves and bury all of the dead warriors on hand. Their beliefs were such that burying the dead here was a very honorable way to return the men back to the Nature Mother, the goddess Sirkia, who would in turn give back to them the verdant green valley they'd recently lost. As soon as the last grave had been sealed up, the remaining warriors mounted whatever horses were left and rode back to the village to inform the women and children of the saddening losses. Back at the village of the Calderonians, scores of huge bonfires burned as men and women danced furiously around them in mass celebration of the battle victory and mournful loss of the slain. As men throughout the village pounded drums and sung ancient ceremonial chants. At the northern end of the village, King Mertan sat upon his throne, high upon a massive dais platform, watching the many isolated pockets of celebration with a telling smile, while holding a goblet of Norda Sturin ale and a smoking pipe held tightly betwixt his toothy grin. Isidra and her uncle Vernasso sat in lesser chairs at his left and right sides, also enjoying the festivities beyond.
Ah, this sight does warm my heart tremendously. I am saddened by the loss of so many good men, but I know that our Mother Goddess will take them into her fold and bless us in months to come with much bounty. To have my daughter and my brother at my side to share in this victorious moment brings me too much pleasure.
Here, here, brother. And this fine Nordastrian ale as well, I suspect.
Yes, indeed. This night of celebration is well earned. Let it continue hence for 3 more days. Then we will begin the arduous task of regrowing our beautiful valley. May Serkia be with us!
The king lifted his goblet, signaling a toast be made by the 3 of them. Raising their goblets as well, the toast was made.
To Serk! To the Goddess Mother!
To the Goddess Mother!
To the Goddess Mother! May she be praised. My niece, my king, I feel that this fine ale has gone straight to my head. Be it that my king has commanded this celebration to continue for 3 more days, I find it wise to stumble my drunken body through the thick of the celebration. And back to my lodge beyond. Please excuse me, family. I think it wise.
Nonsense, Varnasso. Your lodge is too far from here. I do not want my men to see my brother stumble and make an ass of himself on such a glorious evening. Please, my lodge is directly behind us. Please accept my hospitality and take lodgings in my own bed. I do not intend to sleep this night while such wondrous festivities call my attention. Please, do as I command.
My brother, my king, your generosity and kindness knows no limitation. I greatly appreciate the offer. And do as my king commands me to. By Sergio, that's good stuff. I bid you both a wonderful rest of your evening. I will see you both in the morning. Perhaps.
Good night, Uncle. Rest easy and well.
Yes, dear brother. Sleep well. Enjoy my furs. I will not make this a habit.
Varnasso drunkenly stumbled his way down the steps leading from the dais platform and disappeared from view. The pounding of drums and singing and dancing and whooping of celebration continued on through the night. And as the twin sons of Corellia slowly crept over the horizon of the Goddess Isles the next morning, Isidra opened her eyes, yawned quietly and regally, and stood and took notice of so many of her kinspeople now fast asleep upon the ground, littering the village beyond like pebbles upon a vast beach. The fires had died and were smoldering, and the drums had long since ceased their thundering calls, and the dancers, long weary, had obviously joined the ranks of those sleeping upon the ground. She glanced over at her father, who had been snoring upon his throne for how long she did not know. She smiled to herself, enamored at the sight.
My king! My warlord supreme!
Come quickly. Please, oh please, come quickly.
What? What is it, man?
Come a taste, my king. It is your brother Vanasso. He is dead in your own bed. Dead, I say. Slain, his throat cut wide open and his heart stabbed through. An assassin, my king. He has been murdered, and I believe the attack was meant for you.
You've been listening to Kuma-san, Episode 4, The Wielder of Two Swords. Hey friends, please consider supporting this show for as little as $2 a month, because it really helps. There are several monetary levels to choose from, and rewards, like an awesome map of Planet Corellia, lost lore, bonus content, episodes, and an invitation to join the private Corellian Community Facebook group, are just within your grasp. Learn more at patreon.com/KumaSan Podcast. Kuma-san is created, written, and produced by David Paul Seymour. The merry band of players for this week's episode was our newest addition, Susie Bravo as the Princess Isidra Calderon, Jason Robbins as King Mertan Calderon, and another new addition, Wally Phelps as the uncle, Varnasso Calderon, and the Morning Sentry, David Paul Seymour as the narrator. Original music written and performed by Tucker Thomason. Hey friends, there's also two free and easy ways to support the show if you like it. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Kuma-san Podcast, and just share it with a few friends. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you back here next week.